The Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew, the third chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Then Jesus came from Galilee to John at the Jordan to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, "I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me?" But Jesus answered him, "Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." Then John consented. And when Jesus had been baptized, just as he came up from the water, suddenly the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, "This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
And I will show you a still more excellent way. Just prior to Christmas, my wife and I were remembering what Christmas was like for us when we were children. And my wife was recalling the director of music at her home parish, St. Paul's Lutheran in Alliance, Ohio, whose name was Arthur Lindstrom, and his wife, Ruth. And the gift of music that they shared on Christmas Eve in that parish and throughout the year. My wife also remembered how Ruth would sing "O Holy Night" every year. And there was great fear and trepidation among the people that knew Ruth because she was allergic to pine and always was standing next to the pine tree when she sang that solo. So people would wonder when she hit that high note whether she would make it or not. And year after year, she would hit the high note. As we reflected upon that, my wife said, "You know, my expectations and my understanding of what church music should be were raised to an amazing level because of the gift of Arthur and Ruth." For me, it was a woman named Josephine Freund, who was my organ teacher when I was in college, who opened my mind and my ears to a whole new level of excellence in church music. And the reason I say that is because I want to say that we have someone in our midst who does the same thing. That we have been blessed with the leadership of Peter Brown as our organist and choir master, who has raised the level of excellence for each of us. And what we yearn for and what we desire in church music. I'm thankful to his wife, Jane, who has been able to work with our children and to rein in a number of very active little boys to do some amazing things with the children's choir. And for the fine people that sing in our choir and provide music, you have raised our expectation of excellence. And so thank you for showing us a more excellent way. We are appreciative of that. Who is Jesus? That's the question that the writer of the Gospel of Matthew strives to answer in the first three chapters. That as we look at that genealogy of so-and-so begatting so-and-so, and we look at the angels appearing and announcing Jesus' birth, as we look at the visits from the wise men to Herod and to the young child Jesus, and now as we move into this baptismal account, that question appears in front of us. Who is Jesus? We're going to look at that question today and seek to answer it by looking at three things. First, we're going to take a look at how something called incarnation is very different than the other philosophies of life by which we live. Second, we're going to take a look at the fact that incarnation for Christians is specific. And third, we're going to reflect upon the reality that incarnation brings about resentment and rejection for those who hear about it. First, incarnation and other life philosophies. Capitalism, at its core, has this value: people exploiting people. Communism, at its heart, has this value, the exact opposite of capitalism: people exploiting people. The life philosophies by which the world chooses to live see other people as having one or two qualities or possessions that another person needs in order to feel complete. And the goal is to acquire those qualities or possessions for one's own self-service. And that exploitation is not only limited to political philosophies, it is also part of almost every world religion as well. When I was on vacation in North Carolina this past summer, I had an opportunity one day to talk to a young soldier, 21 years old, who had just returned from his tour of duty in Iraq. He said they had gone out on a mission, and their mission was to go through a number of homes looking for insurgents. As they broke through the front doors of the homes, a number of the other ones, insurgents, went out the back door with guns ablazing. He said as he went into the main living area of the house, what he saw was an 8-year-old boy sitting there aiming a machine gun at him. He said, fortunately, the young boy didn't know how to fire the gun. And in being overwhelmed by that moment, this young soldier ripped the gun out of that boy's hands, picked him up, laid him across his knees, and spanked him. Christianity has also, in the past, had the practice of exploiting others. I knew that every year in my previous parish, on October 1st, that a young woman named Marlena would stop coming to worship for a month, because in October we had our annual stewardship program. And it was too difficult for her to be in worship when the church talked about money. The reason that was painful for her was that she grew up in a household where her mother heard their pastor telling them they need to increase their giving to the point where her mother was giving 90% of the household income to the church. And what Marlena had to do every day when she returned home from school as a young girl was to take off her dress so her mother could hand wash it and hang it out to dry. She said in the winter it usually wasn't dry the next morning, so she could wear the same dress the next day. She was not able to play with children her age because she had to wear a bathrobe, the only other item of clothes she had available to her. So brothers and sisters, when it is in human hands, people will exploit other people. But incarnation is different. Incarnation is when God comes to dwell with humanity. And in coming to dwell with humanity, God does not come to exploit. God comes to save. Incarnation is God coming into the world to save the world from itself. So incarnation is different from the other life philosophies by which people live. Incarnation is specific. In the text from the Gospel of Matthew that I read, we have Matthew writing these words, "And a voice from heaven said to Jesus, 'This is my Son, the Beloved, with whom I am well pleased.'" In rabbinic teaching, there was a phrase, colloquially it was said this way, that when a voice speaks in heaven, there is an echo on earth. So in that moment, there was a voice that spoke in heaven, and it echoed on to earth. And it spoke specifically about Jesus. Those who were around when Jesus came out of the water heard that voice, and I heard heaven's announcing that it is Jesus that God has chosen. Incarnation is specific. God's saving act happens only in Jesus Christ. Jerome Burse, in a theological book reflecting on where people are spiritually, in one of the ways he characterizes modern-day Christianity is that we are no longer Christocentric. That is, that we don't hang on to this belief that Jesus is the specific incarnation of God. He says, more cases than not, we are theocentric, a more generalized understanding of who God is. I would actually be bold enough to claim that we are marginally theocentric. And that is that we have life values that we each hold on to that could also be Christian values. And that overlap then is what we think makes us Christian. Justice is a concept that is not specific to Christianity. Hope is a generalized concept that people use regularly in language. And people can forgive one another even if they don't believe in Jesus. So what we do is we use these life philosophies to somehow bring sense to our daily order. And to say specifically that Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah, challenges those life philosophies. So we could be into naturalism, that people are born the way they are. And because they are born the way they are, then we need to honor them for that. But St. Paul challenges that when he says that we must replace the corruptible with the incorruptible. When the perishable puts on the imperishable, when the dead are raised to new life. There are those, like those who buy into naturalism, that buy into legalism. It's all about whether the law says it's right or it's wrong. If the law allows it, it must be right. If there's a law against it, it must be morally wrong. It is entirely possible for something to be morally wrong and there is not a law against it, brothers and sisters. Paul says it this way: all things are lawful, but not all things are beneficial. There is a higher truth than the law of the land. We might consider the therapeutic approach. And we hear this phrase: all people have sinned and have fallen short of the glory of God. And we must ask ourselves as Christians, how can you reconcile that reality with Rogerian unconditional positive regard? Incarnation is specific. It is through Jesus Christ, and it is through Jesus Christ that we are saved. This incarnation will bring resistance from those who hear that proclamation. Matthew takes the baptismal story of Jesus and adds a small conversation. He adds a small conversation between John the Baptist and Jesus. John the Baptist says to Jesus, "I need to be baptized by you, and you're coming to me to be baptized." And Jesus answered, "Let it be so now, for it is proper for us in this way to fulfill all righteousness." And at that point, John the Baptist consented to baptize Jesus. That conversation is unique to the Gospel of Matthew. It is not used in any of the other Gospels. So one must ask the question, is Matthew putting that in there for a specific purpose? And New Testament scholars believe that he is. He is putting that in there as an apologetic. He's not apologizing for what Jesus has done, but as an explanation. An explanation to what? There are two possible reasons why Matthew puts this conversation in this text. Number one is that it was understood that John's baptism was a baptism of repentance for the forgiveness of sins. If Jesus were being baptized by John, it would concede the point that he was sinful. And if he were sinful, he would not be God. And so Matthew is perhaps speaking to the Jews around his Christian community to answer that concern. The other possibility is that the followers of John the Baptist stand in opposition to the followers of Jesus. There's a rivalry between the two. It is entirely possible that the followers of John the Baptist are saying, because John baptized Jesus, John is superior to Jesus. Whatever the reason for putting this in, the issue at stake is the difficulty people have with the claim that Jesus is God incarnate. Jesus is God coming to dwell on earth. We as a congregation are mourning the death of one of the faithful servants of this congregation, Pastor Larry Lehman, who was my predecessor and the 18th senior pastor of Trinity Lutheran Church. This week, in reflection of his life and ministry, I've been listening to his sermons on cassette and reading the things I have that he has written, one of the claims that Pastor Lehman made was this: where you find Jesus, you will find the church. Where you find Jesus, you will find the church. And where you find the church, you will find those around it who stand in opposition to it. I was working with a young woman from the community who had been living in an apartment and needed to move to a new apartment. She moved out of the apartment. She went to her landlord to ask for her security deposit back. The landlord said no. Now, she had in her hand a written statement that said there was no damage to her apartment. But the landlord would not return her security deposit. I called the landlord, and this is what he said: why is the church involved? They have nothing to do with this. Problems with rental housing is a reality where we exist as a congregation. You ask a local police officer when they go into certain homes what their unstated rule is, and they will tell you this: you never stand still and you never sit down. Do you know why that is? Because if you stand still, the cockroaches will start crawling up your legs. And brothers and sisters, there are landlords in our neighborhood who will not treat their apartments with exterminators. We have a member of our congregation who was providing housing for someone who needed a new start, got that person started, the person moved on to a new place. The member of our church went in and left that apartment in better condition than when they first moved in. That landlord will not return her security deposit. Where Jesus dwells, so dwells the church. And the church will stand in opposition to anyone or any practice that exploits human beings. The question was, who is Jesus? And that we looked at answering this question that Jesus is the incarnation of God into a world where people exploit people. And in this incarnation, people are saved. We stand as Jesus' presence in this neighborhood. In the next weeks, we'll be working our way through the book of 1 Corinthians as a wonderful way to reflect upon what it means to be God's people in a particular setting. Starting next week, we will take a look at this: all religion is local. Amen.